What's that?
The education formal working group will come to order. Hopefully by this afternoon it will be the formal conference committee. Welcome and thank you all for coming so early in the morning, and I hope that everyone had a happy Mother's Day, if that fits you appropriately. And we will, our plan will be to go through the side-by-sides. We have a little bit of difference between the House and the Senate in that the House has their finance entwined with their policy. Has been directed from the Senate side to only talk about the policy issues, and which include the standards. The House, of course, has their finance and policy together, and as we go through, we will deal with those issues as we get to them. Also, too, I'm going to let Mr. Strom go through. We actually have four bills on the House side and five bills on the Senate side that have various policy issues kind of floating around in them. So it's, we're trying to make sure that we haven't left things out. We've also passed things out on the floor of the House and the Senate. You know, one body or the other has passed things. So we want to make, and then they're also in our policy or our omnibus bills in some shape or form. So we're trying to make sure that everyone is aware of all of the policy and finance bills that are out there. Just so that as time goes by this week, if we have to make some decisions on different things, that we'll be kind of fully informed, and we'll be able to make some decisions quickly if we need to. Mr. Strom, would you like to just kind of go through the different bills so we kind of have an idea as a committee what's out there?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. On the House side, there's a series of documents that are incorporated in the side-by-side language that you see in front of you. Those include primarily House File 1793, which was the House bill that came out of the committees this year and off the House floor. Second, there are a few provisions from the House tax bill in here related to the Princeburg School District. That language was added after the House deadlines, or after the House education bill left that committee. Similar language regarding Princeburg is in the Senate document. Third, the House passed a pupil transportation bill separately. Those provisions are in the Senate bill, or many of those provisions are in the Senate bill, so that document is included as well. Finally, on the House side, there are, which is not off the House floor, there are going to be some pension provisions that may affect school district funding. Those provisions are being put in a side-by-side article. I don't think that's in the packet that's in front of you right now. But the intent was to have those provisions here as they related to school district financing, so that we don't lose track of those. In terms of the Senate documents that are in the comparison here, the primary Senate policy bill, is identified now as the Senate File Unofficial Engrossment of House File 1793. That was Senate File 1774. Second, there are some provisions from the House, from the Senate tax bill that are in here as they relate to school district funding. The third and fourth bills on the Senate side that are in the side-by-side are those provisions of the budget documents, House File 2028 and 956. And then lastly, the Senate pensions provisions as they relate to school district funding will be lined up with the House pension provisions.
Okay. With that, is there any questions about those bills? All right. With that, we will begin the side-by-side, and it is planned. The Senate has to break at 10 o'clock for caucus, so we will recess at 10 o'clock. The Senate goes in at 11 o'clock for their session. We go in at noontime. I've been informed that the Senate will probably have a rather lengthy session. I'm not sure how long our session will go, but we do plan to reconvene after probably half an hour after whichever body's done last, and then we will go probably into the evening. Depending on how much we get done through the side-by-sides tonight. So in case you're all wondering, you may want to plan on a fairly good evening's worth of work. All right. Who is going to do the side-by-sides? Are you guys going to kind of take turns, Senate House?
Madam Chair, I think if that's all right with Senate staff, the way we've tended to do it in the past, is by article of responsibility, and also describe House provisions, and the Senate will describe Senate provisions. One other document, we'd like to thank the Senate staff for all their hard work on the bill summary, and hopefully we'll have copies of the side-by-side bill summary once we reconvene this afternoon.
Great.
Madam Chair, members, if you'd turn to the Article 1 in your packets, starts, Article 1 on the top of both. It's a side-by-side. On the left side, it should say General Education, House Language, House File 1793, Third Engrossment, and lined up there with the Senate language of the unofficial engrossment of House File 2028, the second version of that. Madam Chair, we'll try to go through these provisions as quickly as possible if they're the same, and also if they're relatively non-substantive. The first provision on in Section 1 here relates to the kindergarten programs. As members of this conference committee are aware, there was some concern this past year that children under the age of 5 were being counted in kindergarten programs when perhaps they shouldn't. The language here defines what a kindergarten pupil is and defines the process that we use to fund kindergarten pupils, and this is coupled later with a series of provisions that address the High Five program in Minneapolis and a similar program in St. Paul. The second section that's listed allows, directs school districts and charter schools to provide summer school for certain students who have not received a passing score on the basic skills test. The third and fourth sections in the House bill are the same in the Senate bill. We believe, we're double-checking to make sure, that we believe this has been signed into law as a separate bill. This just has to do with the Sam Brown belts for the school patrol members.
And Mr. Strom, I know we don't have the summary yet before us, but I'm looking at, can you also indicate if you know, and maybe the summary will help us when we get it, if the language is the same in some of these provisions?
Sure.
With the Senate?
Yeah. Madam Chair, in both Sections 1 and then in Sections 3 and 4 here, the language is the same. Section 5, Madam Chair, is from the Governor's Bill that goes to putting expenditures at the building level. This language is the same in both documents. This would essentially require that all of the funds that are listed in these sections be allocated by school site level. The next section, Section 6, is the same. This essentially eliminates the current requirement as to how revenue gets allocated on a budget basis by school site. This is replaced with the new language in Section 5, and then as you turn to the end of Section 6 here, it adjusts how that report works that the department will put together. And what this essentially is doing is allowing the department to try and keep data consistent from site to site if there are changes in school attendance areas. Section 7 and Section 5 of the Senate are the same, just a technical change eliminating an obsolete reference. Section 8 is a provision related to the transportation of certain homeless students. This was a provision that is in the House bill. It's not in the Senate bill. It's coupled with another provision in the House bill related to how districts transport homeless students and how those costs are calculated.
I want to stop here. Senator Kelly, did you hear this? Was this a topic that you heard or were you approached about this? There was some concern about clarification of this. I think it came from, was it St. Paul School District?
Yeah.
From the St. Paul School District?
Madam Chair, I certainly didn't hear it in the Policy Committee, and I do not remember hearing it in the Budget Division.
Okay. Well, it was something that I think it came to us about the middle of session, did it not?
Yeah. Madam Chair, last fall there was a determination made that the state needed to handle the transportation of homeless students somewhat differently in terms of who had primary responsibility for the transportation needs. The department had interpreted that federal law required us to do it slightly differently, and there was a single provision in their budget bill that we incorporated in our bill, and then this second provision was brought to us and said this would also help clarify the situation, and the department was okay with this language as well.
Just wanted to let you know about the genesis of that it was And then St. Paul actually came to us and said they just needed the clarifying language on it to make sure that it was understood how the homeless were supposed to be transported.
Madam Chair, Section 9, then, of the House bill has no comparable provision, and this requires that districts exclude the salaries and fringe benefits of certain district employees whose duties are other than transportation from the district's transportation expenditures. This is primarily a function of how we calculate our transportation portion of the special ed revenue, why this calculation matters.
And, Mr. Strom, this also was something, I think, that came from the department?
Madam Chair, yes, in relation to redoing the transportation of homeless students, there's some other issues related to clarifying our definitions of transportation expenditures.
Okay.
Section 10 of the House and 7 of the Senate are the same, Madam Chair. Those are just a technical change. Section 11 of the House, there's no comparable provision. And again, this gets to this issue of who's responsible for the transportation of a homeless student.
Madam Chair, the two sections on the Senate side are both from our fiscal bill, so I'm skipping over those. The next section, Section 8 of the Senate and Section 13 of the House are both the same, just the clarification of compensatory education revenue.
Mr. Miller, I'm sorry, would you go back to Section 10 and restate that one? The Senate language on page 9.
Madam Chair, Section 10 is a budget item.
Oh, this is a budget item?
Oh, I'm
okay. And what was it doing?
It created a calculation for extended time pupil units.
For charter schools only, or was it for all students?
I think, Madam Chair, the language on 2027 is a district or charter school.
District or charter. All right. So this was a finance piece. All right. All right.
Madam Chair, Section 12 of the House provision is an increase in the basic formula allowance of $29 per pupil. This was part of a floor amendment to the House bill that reduced the integration aid to school districts and instead reallocated that money on the basic formula. So Section 12 increases the formula allowance by $29 per pupil. Madam Chair, Section 13 has to do with what happens if the contract alternative school changes sponsors. Right now, we don't have a good provision in place to adjust how the compensatory revenue would be calculated if that would happen. There is one contract alternative that we're aware of that's thinking of switching sponsors. So this language, which is the same in the House and Senate, would facilitate the switching of sponsors by a contract alternative program. Section 14 of the House, Madam Chair, modifies transition revenue to adjust for the High Five program and other pre-kindergarten programs where this ties back to that definition in Section 1 of what a kindergarten student is. And essentially what's happening here is for those districts that were running a High Five style of kindergarten program, they'll no longer be funded through the regular pupil units. They'll be funded through a separate calculation here in transition revenue, and that will last the length of time that transition revenue runs, which is through the 2008 school year.
And for both of these, now the language is the same, it looks like,
Madam Chair, both
the Senate and the House. And this has an aid and levy component, is that correct, because it has to do with the transition
program? Madam Chair, yes. The transition revenue for fiscal years 2005 and later is an equalized aid and levy depending on the district's tax base. Currently, there are three districts that we're aware of that have been identified that have these pre-kindergarten programs, Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, and St. Paul. It looks as if, with preliminary data for fiscal year 07 at least, Minneapolis will be off the formula as it were, so it'll be all levy for Minneapolis. but the other two districts will be receiving state aid as well as levy, depending on their property values. The way the section is written, it will pick up other districts if there are additional school districts that are offering a pre-K style of program.
And then in the future, then, will there have to be a forecasted number then for those? And they'll go into the transition program also, correct?
Madam Chair, as I understand it, and the Department or Finance may want to correct me, but as I understand it, the February forecast completed the current school year with the with those pupils still counted in the pupil count. Starting for fiscal year 05, those pupils will be excluded from our count, our baseline count of pupils. So the forecast has essentially already been adjusted for future years for those pupils.
All right.
Section 15 on the House side and 13 on the Senate side are the same. These allow compensatory revenue to be allocated for pre-kindergarten programs.
Mr. Strom, there is an effective date on ours. There is not.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there are a variety of places where effective dates appear. If they don't have substantive effect, I'm not mentioning them here. It'll only be if the effective date has a substantive effect that I'll mention those.
Okay.
Madam Chair, there are some differences in the next section, Section 16 of the House bill and Section 14 of the Senate bill. I'd be happy to describe the House provision. What this allows is for a school district that receives compensatory to take up to 10% of that total compensatory, and instead of allocating it to the site, allow it to be used for pre-kindergarten programs.
Okay. Mr. Miller, how does your program work for your building allocation?
Well, Madam Chair, we'd be happy to identify the portions that are financed, but we're not going to talk about finance.
Well, that's fine, but can you, would this technically be finance? This is reallocating existing appropriation. It's not a new expenditure, is it? Or is this a new expenditure for you?
Well, Madam Chair, this language is in the budget bill.
Okay. But it is technically a reallocation, though. Is that correct? You haven't spent additional money on this one. Have you?
Madam Chair, we're just not talking about finance.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not trying to be confrontive. I'm just trying to understand which things are real additional spending money and which would be things that if we wanted to use them as policy, we could, agree to that as policy issues.
Well, Madam Chair, theoretically, the movement of integration money to the formula was just reallocation, but I suspect there's significant
policy implications.
And other finance kinds of issues, too.
Right, okay. But this one wouldn't have any net effect on the compensatory as far as the... Okay, thank you for that information.
Madam Chair, the next provision on the House side is Section 17. This is a second provision related to the allocation of compensatory revenue for pre-kindergarten programs. If a district chooses to allocate that 10% of compensatory for those programs, they must reserve it and use it only for certain school readiness activities.
And this is the same in both cases?
Madam Chair, there's a slight language difference, but the intent
is
the same.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Where's the language difference?
Madam Chair, the House refers to children ages 3 1/2 to kindergarten, and the Senate, I think, uses slightly better wording, saying to the age of kindergarten.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the next Section 16 on the Senate side is another item off our budget bill. The next five sections are actually items from the Senate tax bill.
I'm sorry, Mr. Miller, 16 was a finance provision, or was it a...
That deals with the reallocation of the compensatory, and that was a proposal that was in our finance bill.
With a test score? Oh, they have a pilot program. Okay, I'm sorry. All right.
So, Madam Chair, the next, like I said, five sections are education-related items that are in the tax bill and have fiscal implications.
Okay, so these were the tax. Five, which one? Five, six?
Seven, eight, and going into Section 9 of the Senate side are all in the tax bill.
Tax bill, all right. Income-based referendum.
Madam Chair, the House changes in Section 18 is language that's simply intended to clarify the referendum, the operating referendum ballot language. Those shouldn't have any substantive effect on that, but the goal there was to simplify the language that goes on the ballot and also to eliminate reference to a percentage that that districts have trouble figuring out how to compute.
Excuse me, Chair.
Which section was this? Are you on
18? On the House side, starting on page 16, section 18.
Right.
And at the top of page 16, it says referendum revenue. This.
Right, but as you look down this, there is a difference.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Madam Chair. The language on the House side is included in the Senate, but the Senate also has a local option income tax in their language.
So this would be, they would have that additional language, I guess, if there was some time that you'd have an income tax levy, then the ballot simplification would only apply to the property tax levy? Or how would that be handled?
Madam Chair, at least as it left the K-12 division, it was just related to the property tax.
Okay, I see. So then when it got into taxes, it changed slightly?
No.
Okay. Or substantially, as people may want to interpret that. All right.
Okay, Madam Chair, then on the bottom of page 18, starting with section 19, there's a couple of levies that were reduced last year that the House is reinstating. Section 19 is the unemployment or reemployment insurance levy. This puts the language back to how it was before last session's change that would allow a district to levy for 100% of their unemployment insurance costs. Section 20 is the same thing for the judgment levy. It would restore school districts' authority to levy for 100% of their judgment costs. Section 21, starting on page R19, is the Safe Schools Levy. There are two changes here. The first of those restores the Safe Schools Levy back to the $30 per pupil level that it was before the 2003 changes. And then the second change is the language starting on lines 24.2, which allows a school district that's a member of an intermediate school district to include in its levy an extra $2 per pupil for safe school costs at the intermediate school district. Madam Chair, the next change on the House side is Section 22, which has to do with the commissioner's authority to withhold or reduce state aid to school districts. Essentially, what this provision does is allows the commissioner to withhold a portion of a school district's state aid if the district does not submit its audited financial data in a timely manner. The maximum amount of the reduction is limited. There's a couple of sections here, and I just want to make sure I'm in the right one. I guess we'll get to that in the next section. But essentially, a couple of these provisions work together, and what they do is give the commissioner a bit of a club if she's having trouble getting financial information from school districts.
Senator Kelly, did you have a review of this particular? This was a department initiative that kind of came out of some concerns about some of the charters or schools not getting their financial data. Did you consider this, or did you have some rationale as to or why you didn't want to put it in or did want to put it in or not?
Madam Chair, we did hear this proposal and consider it. I think that the Senate decided that given the financial straits that our public schools are in, that anything that reduced funding to them was not a good idea.
Even if they didn't get their financial auditing done. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, Section 23 essentially allows the school districts or charter schools at least 2 months beyond the statutory due date for submission of their materials before any aid withholding can occur. And then Section 24 limits that aid withholding to not more than 1% of a district's basic revenue.
Yes, Senator Kelly, we kind of, said we felt the same way that during these difficult times that there could be a lot of reasons why they didn't get their audit in, so we really kind of softened it quite a bit by giving them 2 months and then an appeal process and tried to soften the amount of penalty if they did meet all of those criteria. So, all right. Mr. Strong?
Madam Chair, the next sections are similar, Section 25 on the House and Section 9 on the Senate. This has to do with how the department treats residency for children of divorced parents. The House is broadening that to include either legally separated parents or parents that are residing separately, and the Senate leaves that as just for legally separated families.
Was there any rationale, Senator Kelly, for not including the "our parents residing separately"? Do you remember?
Madam Chair, that subject just never came up when we heard this.
Okay. Members, do you remember the "our parents residing separately"? Was that part of the department recommendation? Do you remember, Mr. Strom, or Ms. Larson, maybe? Was part of the department's. Okay, I think it was. There are some instances where they may be separated legally, and there's still that confusion about who the district should work with. So I think that's why it's in there.
Madam Chair, on page 22, then in section 26, essentially the cross subsidy reports that are currently compiled by the superintendents and then sent in separately, and the department uses their data and works reformats those a bit. Essentially, that authority is just explicitly given to the commissioner to develop those reports from data she otherwise has available. And essentially what that would do is continue to give us the cross-subsidy report of special ed and basic skills in the forms that they're currently in. Madam Chair, the next section, Section 27, is a transportation provision that is in the House bill related to the inspection of school buses. Currently, the State Patrol is required to inspect each school bus. What this change does is allow the department to certify other folks as school bus inspectors, so that the buses could be inspected by someone other than the Department of Public Safety through the State Patrol. And Madam Chair, then in Section 28, this language has to do with the way that levies are certified. I believe this language is the same in both the House and Senate bills. Section 29, Madam Chair, is the appropriation, the open and standing appropriation for general education. The numbers that ultimately go in this section will depend on which provisions are adopted by the conference committees. Section 30 of the House and Section 22 of the Senate have to do with the reporting of kindergarten pupils. Again, this ties into this issue of how we count the children that are currently in programs such as the High Five program. Section 31, Madam Chair, is a provision that's in the House bill but not in the Senate bill. This is a bill that would allow the Eden Prairie School District to adopt a trial transportation fee. Would essentially, under current law, the schools cannot charge a fee for service beyond 2 miles. This would allow the Eden Prairie School District, under certain circumstances, to charge a fee for all students who ride the school bus. There is a sliding fee aspect to it, and it is also limited in that the overall amount of the fee can't be higher than the current amount the district's raising through fees, with an adjustment for changes in transportation expenses. Madam Chair, the next program or next provision, Section 32, is a pilot program on the House side. This was limited just to the Anoka School District. What this provision does is it allows the Anoka District to instead of allocating its compensatory revenue to school sites on the free and reduced lunch count, it would allow them to allocate the revenue based on test scores and student performance and other indicators on the tests. Essentially, they've got to go through a process of notifying the commissioner that they intend to do this, and they also need to report annually to the legislature on what effect, if any, this has on their overall student performance levels.
Madam Chair, on the Senate side, the next provision is an item off the Senate tax bill. And also on the Senate side, Section 14 is another item that is from the Senate budget bill.
And Madam Chair, Section 33 on the House side is a levy authority for the Carpenter school buses. This essentially allows any district that's got a Carpenter bus still in its fleet to levy $30,000 per Carpenter bus in order to replace those buses and get them off the roads. Section 38 of the House bill and Section 55 of the Senate are similar provisions. They both relate in Senate 38 of the House. This is from the House tax bill, not from the House K-12 bill. Relate to the Princeburg School District. Essentially, what this provision does is it allows a allows the Princeburg School District to keep its common school authority and not have to consolidate with its neighboring districts or be dissolved, provided certain criteria are met. And what the provision does is, first, the amount of debt that the district has with the McRae School District needs to be determined. If the districts can't agree mutually on what that amount is, the commissioner is required to determine how much Princeburg owes McRae. And then the district is given two levies. They're given a levy to for the statutory operating debt to get rid of their outstanding debt. And then they're given a second levy that would allow them each year to levy for their projected deficit in the in their budget. The second levy requires a referendum. That referendum can't last more than 5 years. So essentially what the provision in the House tax bill does is, if the Princeburg School District decides it wants to remain a common school district, it needs to hold a referendum every 5 years, and that referendum has to approve enough tax authority to keep the district out of debt.
And this, members, for both sides, and you may have discussed it a little bit in your finance division or policy, and I don't know if you did, but it came very late. We were aware of it during session, hoping that the Princeburg District would work with McRae. And this is Senator Johnson's, Dean Johnson's area, plus it's Representative Junkie and Coonan's, I think, area that they represent. So this is kind of hopefully a solution to this issue, whether it happens or not. But we are trying to track it to make sure that there is some resolution to it.
Madam Chair, I'm going down to page R28, Section 15 of the Senate. That is a levy item off the Senate budget bill. The next section on page
Mr. Miller, on this one, is this an aid provision or a levy provision?
Madam Chair, that is a levy provision.
Levy provision where they can levy $12 and then levy for any of those particular listed issues. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, on page R29, Section 12 is a provision from Senator Neville, and I'll maybe let him go into detail about how this works, but it allows for a joint powers agreement for the Lonsdale, for the New Prague School District and the Montgomery Lonsdale School District to operate an elementary school.
Senator Neville, do you want to
share
that?
Madam Chair, this is an issue that ripened last week, but it's the product of negotiations between two school districts whose boundary line runs right through the middle of a growing town called Lonsdale. And what this provision would allow is the construction of a single Lonsdale Elementary School with a joint powers board, and then the students from either district could attend that as if it was their home district school. And we're hoping that this doesn't have a fiscal note. I expect that it shouldn't. But it was designed to allow New Prague to build the school and Montgomery to contribute to the debt service by levy.
So Senator Neville, all contribute levy to the school, or
based on the number of students that would come from the Montgomery district to attend this school, they would contribute to the debt service, so it would basically offset each other.
Mm-hmm.
It would lower the debt service levy correspondingly in the New Prague district.
Okay.
But it's designed to allow this school to be built in an area that needs one, but not hurt the smaller district, which is Montgomery.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a nice idea sometimes, instead of trying to force consolidation and force a lot of the political stuff that comes with some of those boundaries that kind of change over time because of effective growth. Okay, thank you.
Just one other thing. It ripened last week because there was a capital referendum that failed.
Uh-huh,
so
okay.
I got a call from Lonsdale officials the day after.
And Senator Neville, are the rest of the communities supportive of this then too?
Lonsdale obviously is strongly supportive, and Montgomery is. This does represent or reflect an agreement between the two school districts, but then New Prague at least at one point decided to go ahead with their referendum anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that everybody is still in agreement, though.
Okay.
It's optional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Madam Chair, this is in the policy bill, and it did seem appropriate to empower the two districts to try to come to an agreement about this. And our understanding from Senator Neville, though, there remains some question about this that fiscal staff are working on, that this simply enabled the two districts to allocate between them appropriate amounts of both levy and aid.
Okay, so right. You are still kind of waiting for a fiscal note. Finance is still looking at it.
We are.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative,
you mentioned New Prague. I was just curious how it affects New Prague.
Well, the way this is structured, New Prague would be the district that goes ahead with the issuing of the bonds, but then Montgomery District would levy for each student that goes to this school and pay that to New Prague as tuition. So they would be required to lower their debt levy, debt service levy. That's how it affects them.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, the next section for on the Senate side, page R 31, is a provision from the Senate tax bill. After that, on page R 32, the appropriation is off the Senate Budget Division bill. And then the last item on both sides is both same repealer on both the Senate policy bill and the House bill.
And what is that repealing, Mr. Miller?
Madam Chair, this is dealing with, I believe, the original allocation of general ed revenue. And it is replaced with new language in the bill. And that's it for Article 1.
Section 19, sub 3, that's, you have a loan for your carpenter buses. We have just an outright levy. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Article 2 is academic excellence or education excellence. We could quibble about the title of this for about an hour if you want, but... I don't think we will. Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, Section 1 in Article 2 indicates those data-related sections that are codified outside of Chapter 13. The House file includes additional references to the data that are classified outside of Chapter 13 as opposed to the Senate. Section 2 in the House bill has to do with teacher data that is generated from a value-added assessment model. Both the House and the Senate do have provisions related to value-added assessment models.
Ms. Larson, could you go back up to Section 1, though? We have Subdivision 12, 10. Okay. Is there some reason why?
Yes, Madam Chair. The House has additional references to data that is defined outside of the data practices chapter.
Oh,
the Senate does
not. But the Senate does not. I'm sorry. I missed your first. Okay. All right.
And then to that point, Section 2 refers to one of those instances where the House has defined data outside of Chapter 13 and the Senate has not.
Okay.
Section 3, Madam Chair, has to do with school accountability. Both the House and the Senate make non-public data involving school performance report cards and AYP determinations subject to chapter to section 120B36, which means, of course, they are defined outside of chapter 13.
Okay.
There are a number of sections in the House bill for which there are no comparable Senate provisions related to making tying together student attendance and the ability to drive. It is a governor's initiative. Two of those provisions appear in sections 4 and 5 of Article 2 in the House bill.
4 and 5. Mm-hmm. And was there a financial cost to this, or was it minor? Representative Johnson?
Yeah, there was a small fiscal note to this. It was, I can't remember the amount, but I can find out. I've got it back in my
office. Mr. Crow, do you remember?
A few thousand bucks.
Six or seven, something?
No, it was
20 or 30.
And
Madam Chair and members.
It was essentially based upon the assumption that more kids would be in school, and therefore we're going to have to spend more money on the
because
appropriate
they wouldn't department. Be truant.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members, we're actually carrying a cost of $385,000 in fiscal 2005.
Okay. All right. Yes.
And then $900,000 in 06 and $1 million in 07.
And Representative Johnson, didn't you tell me that you had just read an article that is the president-elect or president?
Madam Chair, I think I know where you're going.
If only it were true, Madam Chair.
Right.
Senator Kerry has said that he supports state attempts to pass laws of this sort. So
yeah.
I think we have bipartisan support of this provision.
I think that's really nice. All right. And then what's the next area, Section 6?
Madam Chair, members, Section 6 in the House and Section 3 in the Senate amend the same section of law having to do with required academic standards, but in somewhat different ways. In the House, there is a proposal to make health and phys ed required academic standards and subject to locally developed academic standards.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate language has world languages as a required academic standard, allowing for statewide or local, locally developed standards. And with our health and FIED requirement, we allow for districts to either use the national standards or locally developed standards, but they're encouraged to use the national standards.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, Section 7 in the House bill and Section 4 in the Senate bill, again, amend the same section of law, but in a somewhat different way. The House is proposing to strike from the list of elective standards health and physical education.
And, Madam Chair, members, the Senate removes health and physical ed as well as world languages from that list.
Madam Chair, members, Section 8 in the House and Section 5 of the Senate, again, amend the same section of law, but in somewhat different ways. In the House, there is a reference to the math requirement, and the change requires that students complete 3 credits of math that would satisfy the math standards for grades 9, 10, and 11. In addition, although both the House and the Senate proposed to combine the social studies requirements, in the House, the House has added business as a part of the economics credit. In addition, the House is proposing to reinstate language inadvertently repealed when the profile of learning was repealed, having to do with waivers in cases where students have completed rigorous coursework, for example, with advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and so forth.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate side has added credit requirements for physical education and one credit requirement for health education before graduation, and also as far as the social studies includes personal financial management as part of area where students need credit in before they graduate.
Senator Kelly, we had some discussion, well, actually quite a bit of discussion in regard to the flexibility that districts were stating that they needed as far as the credits go, that so that they could you know, as they were redesigning their standards. And I don't know if you heard some concerns about that later on in the session, but we kind of wanted to reflect letting districts have a little more flexibility in how they're going to design their coursework and credits. So that's why that's in there.
Well, Madam Chair, we certainly agreed about the flexibility, which is also why we didn't add the language that's on lines 38.22 through 38.25, because that
seems to... We felt it restricted it instead of loosening it up, and we thought just the opposite. Okay.
And then, Madam Chair, the personal financial management was seen in the Senate as part of the economics coursework, not a separate subject matter.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, members, Section 9 in the House has no comparable Senate provision. It requires schools to develop a reading record for students in kindergarten through grade 3 in order to record the students' reading progress. Section 10 in the House, again, has no comparable Senate provision. It has to do with allowing a elementary school to consider retaining students who are not ready for promotion to the next grade level. There is also an appeals process included in this proposal. Section 11 of the House, and again, there is no...
Excuse me, Ms. Larson. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, was there a fiscal cost to this provision?
Which one?
The Student Academic Progress, Section 10.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, if you, there is a cost, and we're showing $5,000 in fiscal 2006 and $6,000 in fiscal 2007.
Thank you, Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, members, Section 11 in the House bill, it appears on R6 of your document, has no comparable Senate provision. It has to do with gifted and talented students. It strongly encourages school districts to identify and assess students for possibly placing them in appropriate gifted and talented education programs and providing related services. Section 12 of the House has a comparable provision in the Senate, Section 6, although there is a difference. It appears on R7. Both bodies propose to establish a Scholars of Distinction program and describe the administration, or I'm sorry, to expand the existing Minnesota Scholars of Distinction program. The House, however, does not direct the commissioner to identify non-state or private funding sources for this program.
Madam Chair, members, Section 7 of the Senate bill relates to violence prevention curriculum and adds a recommendation that the districts include in their policies as well as in their curriculum intimidation and bullying policies and that are defined in a later section.
Madam Chair, members, Section 13 in the House bill does not have a comparable Senate provision. It appears on R8 of your document. What it suggests is that districts be encouraged to offer instruction in character education, and there is a description of what that entails. Section 14 of the House, for which, again, there is no comparable Senate provision, amends the violence prevention education grants to also include character development as a possible grant expenditure under certain circumstances.
Madam Chair, members, on R10 is Section 8 of the Senate bill, which excludes health and physical education from the list of subjects that the or academic areas where the commissioner would be adopting statewide assessments.
Madam Chair, members, Section 15 of the House proposes to amend the same section in the Senate, Section 9, although in a some slightly different way. The first change declares that school performance report cards are non-public data until 10 days after the appeal procedure that has established in law ends. It also declares that data related to adequate yearly progress designations are not public until 10 days after that appeals procedure ends. In addition, the House directs that districts provide sufficiently detailed summary data to parents in order to enable them to make appeals.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate language strikes the requirement for identifying the designations that are applicable to high and low performing public schools, and later on prohibits the commissioner from calculating and reporting a simplified summary of the report cards or using any star or rating system. The language also changes the dates for or the timeline for the appeals process.
Madam Chair, members, on R12 of your document, Section 16 in the House is similar but not the same to Section 7 in the Senate. It has to do with the value-added assessment program. It directs the Education Commissioner to develop a value-added assessment program for the purposes of assessing and reporting students' growth and academic achievement, and to include in this program longitudinal comparisons. The language also allows the Commissioner to contract with an organization that provides such a value-added assessment model. Madam Chair, Section 17 in the House addresses the same idea as Section 10 in the Senate. In the House, there is a direction that school boards annually adopt written district-wide policies that oppose bullying and to provide notice about the policy.
Madam Chair, members, the Senate language provides for a definition of intimidation or bullying, as well as directing the commissioner to maintain and make available a model policy for school districts.
Madam Chair, members, on R13 of your document, Section 18 in the House and Section 11 in the Senate are the same. They have to do with allowing students access to non-syringe injectors of epinephrine under certain circumstances. Madam Chair, members, Section 19 of the House and the Section 1 that you see across from it on R14 of the Senate are almost the same. They seem to have the same general intent, and that is that there is the possibility of having students screened for mental health disorders. Although the phrasing is a little bit different, the Senate specifically says that the district is not required to pay for the screening, and the House says that the district may suggest arrangements for the screening. Madam Chair, members, Section 20 in the House has no comparable Senate provision, and it has to do with one of several sections that appear that have to do with notice when a child with a history of violent behavior is placed in a classroom. And Madam Chair, Section 21 again goes to that point. It declares that school districts and their employees are immune from liability if they make a good faith effort to comply with the notice requirement related to placing students with history of violent behavior in classrooms.
Madam Chair, members, and on page R15 is Section 14 of the Senate bill, which provides for a comprehensive family life and sexuality education program. It provides a definition of what that type of education means, as well as requires districts to offer programs for students in grades 7 through 12, and gives them permission to provide the curriculum to children in grades kindergarten through 6. It also provides a process for notice to parents, as well as an opportunity for parents to opt their children out of the education or out of the program, and for the another provision for the department to offer assistance to school districts.
Senator Kelly, does this have a financial implication as far as the requirement, or did you talk about that?
Madam Chair, it made to districts, but not to the state. Not to the state.
The department, though, has to do some additional work. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I think it's the assistance to school districts is a may. It's the operative language on 27.34
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is may offer. Okay. All right. Did you have any estimate of local impact on the school districts when you were talking about it?
Madam Chair, we did not.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, my sense was that this essentially replaced some other language that we had in existing law,
mm-hmm.
trying to pull some different pieces together.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Madam Chair and members, then moving on, sections 15, 16, and 17 of the Senate language have to do with aversive and deprivation procedures. Section 15 provides a definition for emergency and the use of regulated interventions with students, and then section 16 is a definition for timeout for seclusion. Section 17 directs the commissioner to consult with various organizations to amend the rules that govern those aversive and deprivation procedures, and directs them to how or what should be contained in these amended rules.
Madam Chair, members, Section 22 of the House, for which there is no comparable Senate provision, it appears on R-17 of your document, is the final provision related to providing immunity in those cases when there is a good faith effort to provide notice when a child with a history of violent behavior is placed in the classroom. Section 23 of the House, again, there is no comparable Senate provision, defines comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction. This is one of a number of reading related sections that are included in the House bill but not in the Senate. On R18 of your bill, section 24 is another one of these reading provisions. On R19, you'll see that the Board of Teaching is allowed to adopt rules that exempts teachers who are not providing direct instruction in the classroom from reading preparation requirements previously enacted into law.
And for just the Senate's benefit on the reading licensure thing, particularly this exemption, after two or three years ago, we required teachers when they were going to get their continuing ed credits that they have some exposure to reading practices. But it was too broad and kind of hit some areas where they really don't do any reading instruction. So those are the exemptions. And I was just recently asked to actually take someone out because they do not want to be exempt, and I can't remember which ones they were. If they were the speech language pathologists, it may have been those. So we may, you know, want to amend that because they would really like to have that training required for their speech pathologists. I think that's, yeah, Ms. Keefe is shaking her head in the audience. So, but those, that's why that information is in there. And the previous language is to really clarify what kind of reading instruction we want teachers to have going forward as they are learning to be teachers and, you know, as they're doing their continuing ed work, too.
Madam Chair, members, Section 25 in the House bill, for which there is no comparable Senate provision, allows the Board of School Administrators to reimburse a school district when a substitute teacher has to be employed because the regular classroom teacher is providing some kind of assistance to the board. Madam Chair, members, Section 20.
Yes, Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, did this have a fiscal impact?
I don't. This is the allowing a school district to reimburse a substitute teacher who's employed by the Board of Administration. No. I did not. This is also the practice of the Board of Teaching, too, if somebody that needs to have a substitute teacher, and it was just brought to us by the Board of Administrators, so that... Mm-hmm. Oh, and then Mr. Crow says it comes out of their existing budget, if they want to use that.
Madam Chair, members, Section 26 in the House and Section 18 in the Senate are similar but not the same. They are a result of a request from the Department of Education. They have to do with allowing teachers who are not teaching in their area of licensure to satisfy the definition of highly qualified teacher consistent with No Child Left Behind. The House file requires that all teachers except new and rural teachers satisfy that House definition by the 2005-2006 school year. The House requires that rural teachers satisfy the House definition by the 2006-2007 school year. The House file, unlike the Senate, repeals this amended language on June 30th of 2007.
So how is your House definitions different than we focus on the rural? Is that right?
Madam Chair, the first key difference is that we do not put the federal definition into state law. We keep the two concepts separate. We have a concept of a qualified teacher. Mm-hmm. There's a federal concept of a highly qualified teacher. And we keep those issues separate, and we don't require districts in state law, we don't require districts to comply with the federal law.
Okay. So what does the rest of your House definition do, though? Then describe a highly qualified teacher?
Well, Madam Chair, without having done an exact, maybe Ms. Butler can correct me, but I would say that our language is pretty similar if you leave out everything from 53.36 on the House side down to 55.1.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're pretty similar after that.
Mm-hmm. So we are addressing actually the No Child Left Behind process that so that we make sure that rural teachers are not penalized, and they have the opportunity to meet a highly qualified definition under the federal ruling, and then you just ignore that because you've done some stuff with the No Child Left Behind.
And Madam Chair, we didn't specifically discuss whether we needed to treat teachers in rural areas differently under the process that we approached. Madam Chair, I'll also note that one difference between the House and the Senate is that that the Senate didn't recognize the American Board for Certification of Teaching Excellence.
Okay, where is that located then?
It's in the House bill on R21, lines 5529 to 5530, and that's simply... it's absent from the Senate bill, and then on page R20, lines 3116 to 3118, we clarify our stance with respect to that.
And why is that?
Well, Madam Chair, they don't have a track record.
Okay. We didn't really hear a lot of testimony about the American Board or the National Board. I mean, we're familiar with the National Board, too. Okay. All right. Madam Chair, next ones. Representative Clancy.
Thank you. This is just a question with regards to the No Child Left Behind. I know we had a big discussion about it in the House, about referencing it in this part of the statute, and I see that it's referenced in the Senate language. Is it referenced in the House language any longer? So it's not. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, Section 27 in the House, it appears on R21 of your document, is a reading-related provision for which there is no comparable Senate provision. It addresses teacher preparation programs and requires that research-based best practices in reading be part of the teacher preparation program so that candidates for teacher licenses will know how to teach reading. There is a description of the program. Section 28, again, is another House reading-related provision for which there is no comparable Senate provision. It directs the Board of Teaching to adopt rules for licensing literacy specialists who are intended to assist teachers of reading and other teachers to effectively teach students to read. Madam Chair, members, Section 29 on R-22 in the House and Section 1 of the Senate are the same, and I believe that they were a department proposal. Madam Chair, members, on R-23, Section 30 in the House and Section 12 in the Senate have to do with possessing and using non-syringe injectors of epinephrine and developing a model policy. These provisions are very similar. However, the House requires students to have immediate access to the injectors at all times during the school day, and the Senate file requires injectors to be in close proximity to the student. The House file also requires that the school staff recognize anaphylaxis.
I'm sorry, that the school
staff
recognize the symptoms of, can I, Representative Quinzing was the author of the bill in the House side. Do you have any opinion about the differences between the Senate and the House language that Ms. Larson articulated? Do you have any?
Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, it's my understanding the difference is recognizing anaphylaxis, that phrase.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Quinzing, that's correct. The other difference has to do with what kind of access. The House file requires students to have immediate access to the injectors at all times during the school day, and the Senate file requires the injectors to be in close proximity to the student.
Madam Chair, it's my opinion that in close proximity could be construed to mean actually brought this bill to us in the first place, which is down the hall in the nurse's office in a locked drawer. But it is the opinion of some of the parents who are advocating for this that in close proximity is fine. So this, my opinion would be that whatever comes out will be acceptable.
And then the recognition of the symptoms, though, I would think you would feel the parents and you would feel would be important for teachers to know?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll just note that there were changes made on the Senate floor that actually make the Senate bill closer to the House bill with respect to the immediate access language.
Okay, can you show us?
And with that would be on lines 24.25 to 24.27. And then also to the recognizing anaphylaxis. That is on lines 24.29 to 24.30.
All right, Ms. Larson, do you want to go ahead?
Madam Chair, members, on R-24 of your document, Section 31 of the House does not have a comparable Senate provision. It proposes to establish an alternative preparation licensing program for teachers.
Madam Chair, members, on R-24, there's Section 13 of the Senate bill, which allows for high school students to possess and use non-prescription pain relievers.
Um, Senator Kelling, on this particular one, we heard this too, and I think the Nurses Association testified that there is a task force that is looking at these issues and are going to come up with some kind of a policy, I think, in the future that will incorporate that. So that's why we didn't put it in here at this time.
Well, Madam Chair, the Senate had a youth advisory council that had students who reviewed this. Actually, Senator Ryder came and explained the bill to them, and they felt very strongly that this was a good idea. So, in part, mm-hmm. the Senate was acting on the recommendation from students mm-hmm. that we not wait around.
Mm-hmm. Well, we heard some compelling testimony from the nurses, too, about some of the concerns about, you know, even using over-the-counter, drugs and some of the abuses, too. And I was listening to an interesting thing. I was amazed. It seems like there's always something being discovered or invented every day that's a common everyday household use or something that, you know, we would use as in a responsible way, but now it's turned into some kind of abusive drug. And there's an article about some kind of herbal thing or something that you can use for incense, but now they've discovered you can really get high on it. And I will not say what it is because I don't want to give out that information. Right. But it's just amazing. It seems like when there's opportunity to discover new uses for traditional medicines, it's unbelievable. Okay, what's the next one, Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, I inadvertently went ahead of Ms.
Butler. Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, members, I think now we're on to R25 and Section 19 of the Senate language, which requires a school board to give timely notice to a licensed or non-licensed head varsity coach when the school board declines to renew the coaching contract of that coach.
Did we, Ms. Larson, did we do the teacher training program?
Yes, Madam Chair. That's where I goofed. Well, one of my two goofs this morning so far.
You never goof. You just got ahead of yourself. Okay.
Madam Chair, members, with respect to the license and degree exemption for the head coach provision, there was a similar provision proposed in House File 680, which passed the House floor on May 12th. The Senate file requires the board to give the coach an opportunity to respond upon request, and the House language doesn't say upon request, but otherwise House File 680 is very similar to what appears in the Senate bill.
Okay, so that's one of the ones that we need to track and probably bring in the authors of those bills. And who is the author of that bill in here?
Senator Dill.
Dill? Okay. And who is it in our...
Erdahl,
okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl came and helped to explain the bill to the committee.
Oh, he did? Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, members, in the next section is on R26, Section 20 of the Senate bill, which allows for a probationary teacher whose employment is interrupted for active military service to be considered to have a consecutive teaching experience.
Madam Chair, members, recently on the House floor, you discussed this debate in House File 2175. In Article 1, Section 25, there's a general provision that arguably has much the same effect as this specific provision.
Which article is that again?
It's House File 2175, Article 1, Section 25.
And did it pass?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, Section 21 of the Senate language is staff development program. Later on, there's a repealer for the existing program, but it allows for requires districts to use their reserve revenue for staff development to promote and sustain results-based staff development programs or plans, and requires alignment with state and federal requirements to enhance the quality of teaching and increase achievement of all students.
Okay.
And Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Ms. Ani from the department presented this to the committee. I didn't realize until just now that the House didn't have this. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a department recommendation based on and an agreement that had been reached. Is there some reason the House didn't do it?
Yes. We read the language and we thought it was a little bit flowery and a little bit superfluous. And I understand that this language actually has, you've cleaned up the language quite a bit. Is that correct? This is not the original language.
I'm sure that flowery wouldn't get by Ms. Butler.
I wouldn't get by Ms. Larson either. So, yes, we thought conceptually it was, going in the right direction. But as we read the language, we thought it got a little bit over the top in some areas. So, and it's don't want to criticize anybody as far as their, their work, but. We hope that they would come back, and apparently they did, kind of get together the groups that had originally did it, I think our bill passed before that work was done, and so they could put it in your bill because your bill was a little bit later than our bill was. Okay.
Madam Chair, members, then continuing on R28. Section 22 of the Senate file allows for a school board to operate and expend funds for an employee recognition program for district employees. Section 23 requires school districts and the Department of Education to work to improve student access to licensed student support services, which include chemical health specialists, counselors, school nurses, school psychologists, and school social workers.
Madam Chair, members, on R29 of your document, sections 32 and 33 have to do with the ability of the district superintendent to assign and reassign both teachers and administrators, and reserves to the board the ability to assign and reassign for purposes of school site decision making. Section 33 has the same intent. Madam Chair, members, Section 34 in the House and Section 24 in the Senate on R31 of your document amend the same provision and seem to have different resolutions to what appears to be the same issue. The House increases from $5,000 to $8,000 per fiscal year, the maximum amount that's allowed in a contract between a school board member and the school district.
Senator Kelly?
Madam Chair.
On your solution to this, who came up with this?
Madam Chair, I don't remember the discussion in committee exactly, but but the sense was that the number chosen would have different relevance perhaps in a rural school district compared to a metro school district, and so that a formula that reflected in general what staff were paid made more sense than just picking a number.
I haven't looked at, for an example of Minneapolis, but I'm wondering if, and maybe Mr. Nauman has looked at that and has some kind of a run district by district, but would it be possible that you would have a school board member that could be paid $30,000?
Madam Chair, we didn't talk about specific outcomes, but as we talked about whether just picking a number made sense, the committee felt that trying to do it on a formula basis was a fairer approach.
Yeah, my concern is that, we not, get this to be too, highly paid, because I think it was actually to address some of the rural concerns. It doesn't really affect. Well, we can think about that one. I just would like to see what the further implications of that kind of a formula would be.
Madam Chair.
Senator. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was a Senator Kubley provision, and when he brought this in or presented this to the committee, he had this formula in there, but they were working off of a two-thirds provision, and we reduced it to a half. his testifier had worked through this formula, and it actually reduces the number, I believe, down to around 7,000 from the 8. It was actually a reduction.
Mm.
And I can go back and revisit this and
okay.
Some questions on
that. Thanks, Senator Sklar. I appreciate that.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, Representative.
I had that provision in the House, and that came from the School Board Association.
Yeah.
And that's the language that they, you know, had requested with that number in it.
Okay. Well, maybe we can talk informally, too, and get Senator Skoy's information and yours and talk with the school boards and see. I'd just like to probably plug that into a few areas and see what actually happens. Okay.
Madam Chair, members, on R31 of your document, Section 35 in the House does not have a comparable Senate provision. It has two changes to the charging of fees law. It allows the charging of fees when charter school students are transported to participate in extracurricular activities in the resident district. In such cases, the transportation costs are to be charged to the charter school. In addition, there is language authorizing the charging of fees in cases where districts provide courses, programs, and other activities provided by the school staff that are not related to high school graduation, required summer school classes, or other necessary education-related goods and services, and that are provided outside the school year. Section 36 in the House and Section 1 in the Senate on R32 amend the same section and laws, but in different ways. The House bill contains language addressing the participation of charter school students in extracurricular activities in the resident district. The only change that is the same in both bills has to do with the renaming of a specified activity fund.
Senator Kelly and Senate members, we've kind of had this discussion now for 2 or 3 years about whether charter school students can access a resident district, you know, the district where they reside in extracurricular activities. Homeschool parents have that opportunity to do that, and public school charter schools do not. And so we've had this kind of continual discussion about that, and we've got language again reflecting, really reinforcing the fact that charter schools would have to pay a fee, all fees that any other student would have to pay, also a proportional share of any cost that a resident district would incur if they added additional students to any kind of activity. So just wanted to give you a little history on that.
Madam Chair.
Or Senator Sklar, I'm sorry, used to be. I keep, sorry.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We actually missed you over in the
We did have a pretty fair discussion on this in the Senate and discussed the decisions that students make and the ramifications of those decisions,
mm-hmm.
and realized that many students in this state are making lots of choices with regard to their education. Some of those have ramifications, and others that would include this. We'll continue the discussion.
Thanks, Senator Sklar. We just kind of looked at it as a fairness issue, since homeschool kids can do this, and we didn't feel like it really impacted that many resident districts. We're just trying to serve all the kids, and we understand both of the arguments on both sides, and trying to come to some kind of a fair agreement in the future. I hope we can, because I guess I regard the kids as, you know, the parents are also paying taxes, and some of the little small charter schools don't have a lot of opportunity for their kids to participate, and they may have opted for a charter school because of some academic reasons that, you know, a larger school maybe can't address. So,
Madam Chair, if I could just briefly, mm-hmm. The process is in place for doing the cooperative agreement, of course, and in committee, I think we heard testimony. There were numerous budget issues that would have to be resolved, and the best way to resolve them were through local negotiations and discussions, and we really think if we could, we'd leave this as a local control decision as long as the process is in place to have it resolved.
All right. Go ahead, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on R34 and following of this bill, there are a number of bus-related provisions, and the bus provisions are not actually in the are not in the House bill, but they're in another bill. They're in House File 2561, which was placed on the calendar for the day on May 6th.
Okay, so it has not passed.
Yeah. Well, okay. The last time I checked.
All right. I don't think we had this one. Did we?
That would have been fine.
Yeah, no. Okay, so it might be up this week if we... Okay. So it is in your... And the language regarding the buses are... Have you been able to see if they're identical language?
They are. Madam
okay.
Chair, they are.
Okay, so if we pass this, then...
But Madam Chair, I think it's probably identical except for Section 26 of the Senate.
Oh, yes.
Well, Madam Chair.
The infamous advertising on school buses / Senator Tomasoni, Representative Tomasoni.
You know, Madam Chair, I was fine with language the way it was. I don't know how it showed up here.
who did offer this?
In the House.
I think Senator Olson.
Senator Jen Olson?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And, Madam Chair.
Yes.
We picked up the school bus language, the safety language, mm-hmm. in the budget division, and this was one of the hitchhikers that came along.
Oh, so this is in the budget division and in this policy?
No, it's just in the policy, Madam Chair, it's just in the policy bill, but it had been processed through the budget division.
Oh, okay. All right.
And Madam Chair, there are a number of sections to the bus bill that appear in the Senate, but were not part of the House bill. About four or so.
Okay, we want to point those out then?
Yeah, they're section in the Senate bill. They're sections 38, 39, 40, and 41.
And those are on which pages?
They're back on the R.
Okay, well, why don't we, as we will...
R50 and following.
Okay. So we're on... So on page R36, sections 37 and 4 are the same. Is that correct?
Madam Chair?
No, mm-hmm. That's not...
No? Ms. Butler?
I think I got lost in my...
Page 36.
Did we skip over section 29 of the...
We sure did.
Oh.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead, Ms. Butler.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, Section 29 of the Senate language just allows for a online learning provider to phase in academic standards the same way a school district would be allowed to.
Okay.
And then, Madam Chair, members, Section 4 is from our budget bill.
What about Section 38, Ms. Larson, on page
38? Yeah. Madam Chair, members, Section 38 on R37 of the document amend language regarding charter school sponsors. The House is proposing to declare the board of the Perfect Center for Arts Education a charter school sponsor, and also to allow the Education Commissioner to approve up to 5 charitable organizations that have as their primary activity sponsoring charter schools for the purposes of serving as sponsors.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, with respect to that, at least with respect to the Purpose Center, the mm-hmm. Policy Committee discussed that, but we're informed that both with respect to that provision and paragraph C of the House language, that there was a fiscal impact
mm-hmm.
that had to be carried.
Mr. Crowell,
Madam Chair and members, that's half correct. The provision in subdivision 3, paragraph A, related to the Purbridge School, is an existing charter school, so there wouldn't be any additional cost to that provision. The provision that allows the 5 single-purpose sponsors does carry a cost in the tails.
And Madam Chair, I think that at least the information that the budget division got was that that in authorizing this, it wouldn't necessarily be limited to that existing charter school, so that they mm-hmm. decided to carry a cost.
Mm-hmm. The fiscal note is zero.
I don't know. Finance heard that the fiscal note would be zero on that, so it, you know, there could be a possibility of doing all of those if you want. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, members, on R38 of your document, Section 39 in the House, for which there's no comparable Senate provision, amends language requiring teachers to be a majority of the members of the Board of Directors for a charter school. The language is proposed to say may instead of must. And on R39, Section 40, this is another charter school provision, and what this says is that charter schools are subject to laws only if expressly stated. This provision would make charter school law integrated with the proposals regarding providing extracurricular activities for charter school students in the resident school district.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. this may be a good place
to stop.
To break.
Yeah, okay. Are we just about done with the article? Okay, all right. Then let's stop. We'll stop, members and audience, at page R40, Section 31 of the yep. Senate. And we'll come back. We'll just leave everything here in the room. We'll lock up the room, and we'll come back after 1/2 hour after the last body adjourns. This meeting is recessed.